This episode of Apple at Work is sponsored by Muzzle. Deploying, managing, and protecting Apple devices at work shouldn't be difficult or require several solutions. Muzzle is the only Apple unified platform for business. By combining enhanced device management, endpoint security, internet privacy and security, single sign-on, and enhanced app management into a single Apple-only platform, businesses can now easily and automatically deploy, manage, protect their Apple devices automatically with one solution at an affordable price. With a solution for every business size and the best support in the market, start a free 30-day trial and see firsthand why Muzzle is more than an Apple MDM. Muzzle is everything you need to work with Apple. To learn more, visit business.muzzle.com. That's business.muzzle.com. Thanks to Muzzle for sponsoring Apple at Work this week.
Welcome to Apple at Work, podcast all about Apple and the enterprise. My name is Bradley Chambers, your host. I have back on the show our good friend, Weldon Dodd from Kanji. Weldon, welcome back to Apple at Work, and it's a big week for everybody in the Apple IT industry.
Yeah, huge week, right? It's like Christmas in September with new OS releases out.
Well, I think too, you know, you kind of the months run together, but normally we see a little bit longer of a delay between the release of iOS and the new macOS. And this year we didn't. You know, they're just coming kind of days apart. How does that? You know, we have a lot to get into with you all being day one ready. But what do you think does that make it easier for Apple IT admins to have all this kind of within 7 days of each other, or do you think it's be better to have a little bit of a break in between these big releases?
Yeah, I mean, I guess it's good in the sense of ripping the Band-Aid off, right? You can get it all over right at once. So there's some advantage there. I think generally, you know, teams want time to think about how to roll out their OS updates. But having them together like this is real nice. It kind of removes the sense of anticipation or worry or concern that admins might have. Now we know what the dates are. It's all right here. It's ready to go. We can get it done right now.
Well, and your 90-day window where you can basically delay access for your employees, a countdown starts. And so obviously, and I think that's what I'm seeing of a lot of teams is even the ones that are saying, hey, we're ready today for you, the companies, but they're not necessarily forcing the update. And I think that's a very intelligent way to handle it of like saying, hey, we're going to make it available for those of you that are like kind of itching for it. That's awesome. We're ready on the admin side. But if you're content with, where you're at today, then, you have some time before we're basically going to force that update. And I think that, do you agree that that's a pretty healthy way to stagger that rollout?
Yeah, absolutely. I think it'd be pretty rare for a company to say, absolutely, you must update to a new .0 release on that same day. But making it available as soon as possible is really nice. I think it's generally true that the best features, but also the most secure operating system is going to be the latest one that Apple has worked on. And so being able to adopt that quickly is a real advantage.
Well, and then two, we're still early enough in it where if there was, say, some sort of massive exploit security problem that Apple wanted to patch, they're going to backfill their previous OS here because this is still close enough where they understand, they can't leave, an OS that was, was current a week ago. They can't just say, hey, this is no longer, secure, quote unquote, anymore. They're going to patch both of those. And I think that makes it easy. So you all announced that you were day one ready, which I know that's probably a simple sentence to say, but I know that requires a ton of work on your product engineering teams to be ready because you're really building, in the air where you don't know necessarily what this final release is going to look like until it's here. Can you speak on kind of what does your team go through from WWDC to now to say day one ready? What, how difficult is that to get ready where you can tell your customers, hey, we're ready?
Well, it really begins in June with WWDC. So, we sit and watch the keynote and the state of the platform sessions and the what's new in device management sessions that week of the Worldwide Developers Conference. And we're learning new information about what's coming at the same time as really everyone else is. So that kicks off the process for us. We, make a list of all the changes that are coming. Things that Apple has announced and explained. And then when we get the first beta version, we sometimes find some additional things, right, that weren't mentioned or weren't outlined in the keynote or what's new in device management sessions. And so that process, you know, continues on. We do get some interaction with Apple through those following weeks and months to get clarification on what's happening with some of the DDM implementation, for example, or some other aspects. And that's obviously really useful. But then when the we get the chance to actually implement it on the beta versions and see how it interacts with our platform, that's when we find out how we've done. And from there, it's just a sprint to the finish line to make sure everything's ready to go.
Yeah, it's, I do, I've said on multiple podcasts, like I do sometimes miss the like 18 month windows between how we used to do macOS. That makes me feel like I'm aging myself saying that. But it's tough because, you know, you really, you have this kind of sprint the rest of the year where you've got to get everybody, you know, upgraded, and then you kind of have this lull in the spring and it's like, okay, let's do this thing again. You know, and I think this is one of the advantages of Apple, you know, say, you know, quote unquote, you know, they have a lot more app developers, for example, than they do device management partners. And so there's a little bit more of a, hey, we can help you, you know, we're building this in flight together. Like we know these new features, we're going to help you, because if you all aren't ready, that hurts Apple's customers. And so, you know, it's really makes sense. And I think this is one of the, to me, the big reasons why I love Apple Business Essentials, because Apple themselves has to be ready to handle this. So they're, you know, this whole thing is that when you dog food your own technology, it's going to be better. And I think that really benefits, you know, all the device management industry on, you know, Apple having to build this itself. And of course we're seeing, you know, part of this is a little bit different of release, particularly on the iOS side with Apple Intelligence not being there in the .0 release. It's coming in the .1. What, you know, this was when they announced this, my immediate question was like, okay, this is really, really cool, but there's going to be some things that the IT admins have a lot of questions about on what data is being sent where. You know, and I'm going to put the link in the show notes. It's a really cool blog that you all did kind of outlining what's ready on day, you know, the day one support. Here's where the new features are. What do you, you know, what's your thinking as you know, Apple Intelligence comes out? How are your customers, how are the IT, you know, admins going to handle enabling, disabling aspects of Apple Intelligence?
Yeah, this is an area that is really rapidly evolving because Apple's given us some controls over Apple Intelligence. And I think that's really useful, but there's still so much to learn and to explore around this idea. So you've mentioned a couple of things that are really important. I think, look, at the end of the day, IT's job is to increase productivity for the people we serve at a company. So whatever the mission of that company is, if it's selling insurance or making widgets or helping educate people or whatever it is, right? IT should empower those people, make them more productive. And AI is a really promising technology that promises to deliver some of those increased productivity gains that we're looking for in the sense of, you know, being able to more quickly edit your writing, make sure that it's grammatically correct or it's stated in a way that you like, to be able to summarize data and create that little three-line summary that you're looking for. There's things there that AI can do that are really nice. They take time away from someone's job in the sense of being able to get that time back to do something else. So I think IT should embrace artificial intelligence and some of these tools. And we as Apple admins should embrace Apple Intelligence and some of the things that it can do for the customers that we serve, the employees or teammates that we serve. But yeah, I on the other side, I have concerns. Where is my data? What data is being accessed? Where is it going? What third parties have access to this data? You know, when it transitions from on-device processing to private cloud compute to an external provider like ChatGPT, where are those boundaries and how can I see what data is moving across those boundaries?
No, I love your framing of Apple, you know, an IT person's job is to make their employees be more productive. And I think that is a very modern IT philosophy. And being secure is part of being productive.
But absolutely.
But you can't be so if you wanted to be really secure, you wouldn't have the internet, you wouldn't have networks, you would do it all paper and pencil. I mean, in some ways, like not having AI available at your company may end up looking like, hey, we never adopted an email because we didn't know how to secure it. Like the AI technology is here, and it's, and the industry's figuring this out kind of in flight. And there's really no company, in my opinion, that thinks through where this data goes as much as Apple. And I think that should give us all, kind of a bright hope that, like, hey, Apple understands actually the questions that we have because they think about those questions too. Like, Apple's not one to, hey, we're just fine with whatever. Like, they're going to give you visibility, you're going to give you control. And I really have a lot of high hopes that, again, you made a good point. Like, the difference is like what's on device, what's private cloud compute, and then what's with open AI is like, I mean, again, I think it's so much of like, if I, again, good example is, let's say I'm a lawyer and we build our own, our operation, we build our own large language model. I want to be able to plug that into Apple Intelligence and have that be part of the data. That's where I hope this goes, is you're not just relying on, a third-party vendor. Like, let me bring my own data and we're going to train our own data. And then you really can do some really cool stuff. And I'm really excited about it. But I do think that, everybody has a lot of questions. And I think it's, we're going to figure this out slowly. I mean, this is a couple years revolution, and this is the first time it's going to be heavily built into your devices. You do have a lot of questions always, but I kind of remember having these same questions and these same conversations when iCloud first came out. And like, hey, what's syncing? Where is this syncing? Who has access to it? Where is this data going? And we figured that out as an industry, and like, we're in a really healthy place. And so I'm thrilled about it. And again, but I know, everybody's just, as we go, Apple's going to fine-tune the tools that device management vendors can offer. Again, I'm thankful. It really looks like they're going to go down the path of kind of letting you turn on certain aspects of it. But what I feared to happen, it was going to be one toggle, Apple Intelligence on or off. And the default for a lot of IT people for the first year was just going to be off. Don't allow it. We don't know what this is. And that's what we don't want. So I do like that fine tune. Like, we're going to let you kind of work in it and add the aspects that you like.
Yeah, I think the general mood of cross customers that I've spoken with and people that I've interacted with is that people are very interested. They're generally willing to give Apple the benefit of the doubt in this area, but everyone's very eager to, learn as many details about these services as quickly as they can.
Now, one of the changes I sort of feel like went unnoticed a little bit is some of the changes to system extensions. Can you speak to kind of what we're seeing with, new version of macOS and how these system extensions are a little bit different than the previous version?
Yeah, so just to back up one step, system extensions are, a much more secure way to enable new functionality in the operating system than was previously available with kernel extensions. So system extensions have pretty well-defined boundaries and APIs that they can interact with in order to modify, some behavior like interacting with the network for content filtering or for defining how items in the Finder appear. If you're using a service like Dropbox, for example, it can use a system extension to tell you if that file has been synced up to the cloud repository. So system extensions kind of deliver a variety of a wide range of functionality, but they do it in a secure way that has these well-defined APIs to interact with the operating system. And you can deploy those system extensions in a couple ways. A user could install them on their own, right? And so there's some control over whether or not that's allowed. And then, as an IT administrator, you can use MDM to deploy applications that include system extensions with them. And so one of the new controls is that you can remove the ability for the user on their own device to be able to turn off a system extension that IT has chosen to deploy through MDM. So if you're using a service like CrowdStrike or SentinelOne or even Conjur's own EDR solution, those require system extensions in order to provide the security tooling that people need. And so now, if you're deploying those tools with MDM, you can also specify that the associated system extension cannot be removed or cannot be disabled.
Well, and system extensions, it's been in a discussion. I particularly, I mean, the issue with CrowdStrike from a few months back, obviously is still, you know, on the mind of a lot of IT professionals. And, you know, obviously, like, Apple devices were not affected because the way they modernized how a lot of these tools work is where they cannot essentially brick the device. And so I know Apple had a lot of work to do to, you know, because kernel extensions, like, they were just, gosh, you know, as long as I've been a Mac OS user, it just felt like they were part of it. And it was like, it was one of those, like, this doesn't feel stable, but, like, just so much of it, it just was all we had at the time. So I do think Apple deserves a lot of credit for modernizing, like, recognizing, like, hey, we actually do need to modernize how these things work. And in some ways, I would probably even say Dropbox exposed to Apple, like, okay, we do need to modernize how this works, because they were doing this stuff before, you know, they were putting the little icon on Finder, like, you know, before this, you know, the modern system extensions. But the thing is, like, that was a really good feature, and that made Dropbox really, really easy to use. And again, at the time, having a folder that synced, like, that was a really kind of novel concept, because there was really no other technology. Now we just kind of assume we get, there's so many ways to do that now with OneDrive and Box, but Dropbox really paved the way for that. And so I think Apple does some credit in saying, like, hey, this is a neat functionality, but we don't like the way it's implemented. Let's go back and retool. Like, it's very clear that customers need things like this to work, to extend how this works. And again, and the enterprise side, with, you mentioned, you know, the EDR tools, it needs to be done in such a way where it can do its job, but also can't get so deep that it can essentially brick the device. And that's what we saw, you know, a few months back on the Windows side. And so, but again, I do like the way that now IT teams can say, hey, this one cannot be turned off. Like, we have to have this on. So again, it's just another thing that's working, you know, working well. What is new? And again, this has been a slow burn. Declarative device management, was there anything impactful to you with these latest updates?
Yeah, so now coming in from the Sonoma to Sequoia transition, right? That was, you know, MDM V1 to DDM. Sonoma updates that we've been getting the last year, right? Those have all been delivered via DDM. And now's the first time we're going to see a major OS upgrade going from Sonoma to Sequoia, where we can use DDM. So I think that's going to be really interesting to see. We've seen great improvements within our own customer base adopting DDM to drive software update. It's faster, it's more reliable. We've seen an increase in the velocity of adopting new updates because of that ease of use, I think, and because of the higher reliability that we get with DDM. And so I'm eager to see what that adoption curve looks like for Sequoia, because DDM software update promises to be a much smoother path for customers that are going from Sonoma to Sequoia.
Smoother with a capital S, I would say, and maybe bold it too. Some other, just again, y'all have a great blog post just about the changes. I will include that in the show notes. But one of the things I've been just even thinking through, like, how, okay, what's the implications of this? Is the MAC address randomization, how you can set it to be, okay, have the actual MAC address, have a fake one essentially, or also randomize it? Because again, if you always have the same MAC address, you can have some device fingerprinting that can happen. It's not, you know, it's just not about IP address, it's about the MAC address too. But you also add the ability for IT admins to control that, because depending on, you know, the environment or what you're doing, there may be a reason you don't want that randomization to be on. And again, I think one of the things I've long believed is it's not Apple's job to decide what the customer wants to have. It's Apple's job to enable the tools for the customer to make sense of their environment. Because again, different industries have different reasons for doing different things. But I do like that, hey, let the customers control that. We're going to add that feature, but then let the customer and the device management vendor build in the tools to allow, you know, customers to do what they want.
Yeah. But rounding out some more DDM tools, right? There's a new disk management control for mounting external or network volumes. And then there's another new control for Safari browser extensions and enabling those on iOS and iPadOS.
Well, the Safari, it's funny, I was actually chatting with a vendor last night. I'm going to cover them in a future article. It's an island browser, and they have built a really, really customized enterprise browser built on top of Chromium. And I do think there's a lot of interesting things that in the future we can do on the browser side. because of the, most companies are just operating in a SaaS environment where most of your tools are going to be web-based. And again, Safari extensions is are I think are really, really well done. And so I think by having these controls here, now you can have vendors say, "Hey, we're going to sell an enterprise grade extension," and then you can easily deploy it and ensure that it's on. I mean, again, even if it's some sort of like even a Grammarly or something, something as simple as that, like, "Hey, we just want to make sure this is on." And it's not that you, I mean, trying to think of what it says. It's making it easier on the user to not have to think through like, "Oh, IT's installed Grammarly on my device, but now I got to go enable it." Now we can just make sure it's enabled on the IT side. And it's a more seamless experience. You don't have to kind of let people know like, "Hey, we've installed this tool that has a browser extension, but you got to make sure you turn it on." It's like, "No, it's just make it on."
Yeah. There's some other scenarios too, like in order to achieve SOC 2 compliance, one of the details you have to take care of is there needs to be a password manager installed on endpoints. And so one simple way that you could do that is you could deliver it as a browser extension. And as long as you can show that you've mandated this and you've delivered it, and it's being enforced by your device management tool, well, then you pass that control in your audit and you're on to the next thing.
Well, and I think that will be interesting to see. I don't want to speculate on what Apple's going to do because, again, SOC 2 compliance is so critical. But there are tons of great password vendors. I mean, obviously, our friends at 1Password, LastPass, they're all great. But then you've got it's completely possible that Apple could expand the Apple Passwords app to manage iCloud accounts. There could be some things there, and so it's completely possible that could be a part of that in the future. And it's obviously it's baked in running Safari. So there, I'm glad that password management being not like a bonus or like, "Oh, it's good that we have that," but now it's like, "Hey, we actually need to have this because otherwise it's like you end up either forgetting your passwords or you just have insecure passwords everywhere."
Yeah, pulling it out into a new passwords app in these new versions of the operating system, I think is a really good move. Having those passwords kind of buried in system settings and or in the Safari browser was kind of an awkward place to direct people to find them, but pulling it out into a standalone app, I think is a great move.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, overall, I think I do think I was thinking last night, like how streamlined operating system updates have become, particularly on the Mac OS side. I mean, iOS is kind of always bad, so like fairly smooth, but like moving from one to the next doesn't feel as big of a lift for the end user. And like Apple's done a nice job about making it kind of just transition along, but not being such a big deal for IT. Like you're just seeing fewer and fewer things break year over year when it's like, "Hey, if we upgrade, this vendor is completely broken now." It's like, there's been the industry's gone along well and has, and I think this says a lot to the foundation that Apple's built on the device management side, but also the operating system side of like things don't break as much as they do from just installing a new update.
Yeah, I think that's true. That's the benefit of the work that Apple's done previously. Like we touched on system extensions a minute ago, and that transition happened a few years ago now. And so it was a bit rough, right? When vendors had to drop their kernel extension and implement a new system extension. But now that we've had the benefit of a couple years under our belt where that's been adopted and used, I agree with you. I think it's become pretty reliable, a lot smoother. And because, particularly with system extensions, because those boundaries are much more well-defined and the APIs to talk to the operating system are much more robust, that has led to an overall increase in reliability and performance and security. So very tangible benefits from foundational work that Apple has been investing in for several years.
I agree. It's a long burn. A lot of these features, you don't, it's hard work one day, but it pays dividends for the next decade. Well, any final as we wrap up here? Again, y'all, congrats on the day one support. I know that seems like kind of quote unquote trivial to say that, but I know it's a ton of work on your engineering teams because you kind of have to. Because you have an existing roadmap of things you're doing and bugs you're fixing, but then you have to kind of, all right, let's do this thing too. So I know it's a lot of work. So congrats to the team. Any final thoughts on something that IT admins in the Apple industry should be thinking about as they roll these out?
Yeah, no, thank you. And thanks for the kind words about, you know, the effort that we put in. I really want to give a shout out to our whole team on the R&D side that's made this possible. You know, you're right. We would much rather deliver new features and new functionality that helps make Kanji a better product. But, you know, customers absolutely expect that we're ready on release day to support all this new functionality and make sure everything works correctly. And so we set aside time in our development schedule to make sure that we can do that. It's not as exciting, right, to be able to say, yeah, it still works. It still does the same things. But you know, we've also had the chance to support some of the new functionality that's been delivered as well. I think, you know, going into this season with the new updates, you know, I'm really, again, optimistic about what's coming. I think Apple's headed in a great direction. We've seen a really strong foundation for macOS and for iOS and the others. Apple Intelligence is brand new. I think I would just go back to what I said earlier, that the general mood is positive. Apple has earned the benefit of the doubt around privacy and the way that they handle data from their actions in the past, but everyone's very, very eager to get their hands on it and start using it. So this year is a little bit different in the sense that we got the .0 releases this week, which are exciting in themselves, but everyone's still really looking forward to, you know, what should be the .1 release where and beyond, where more and more of these Apple Intelligence features get enabled and turned on for us to take a look at.
Well, and just wrapping up here, I actually don't hate that Apple Intelligence is in a .1 release because, you know, you have enough challenges in just making sure that you're ready without adding such a transformational feature. So by having the .0, be like, all right, let's just get here and let's get on this thing. And then in another month or two, we're going to add this feature. It's kind of a nice transition. I don't hate like kind of staggering these feature rollouts because it doesn't seem as disruptive to workflows. Obviously, Apple Intelligence is a pretty big upgrade. But like, you know, when you know, 17.2 came out last year and it was like something new, it's like, it's fine. Like it's actually is a nice way to slowly add things throughout the year that are better baked and have fewer bugs. I don't hate it. And it just allows you to kind of tackle one problem at a time. But yeah, it's been fun. We're here. It's you know, we can kind of, you know, the 90-day, you know, if companies are delaying it for their final testing, their 90-day countdown has started, and then they'll be available to employees. But again, I know most teams that I talk to, if they're delaying it for a couple weeks as they do their final testing. But you know, the 90 days almost certainly doesn't hit it, because you know they're ready to get people on that new OS, because as you said in the beginning, this is going to be the most secure OS that Apple has out, so it makes sense to get everybody on it. But we will wrap up there. Well, thanks for your time. Again, check the show notes. We'll have links to everything we talked about, and we will see everybody next time.